The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
Real Racing USA, coming at you live from the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in Bradenton, Florida. With us tonight, Carol Winks.
Good Jack, evening.
Over on the soundboard.
How you doing, man?
All right, brother. Tonight, we're here to celebrate one of the greatest names in Florida stock car racing, the Ruderman family.
Oh, I thought you said Tony Stewart.
No, he's not.
Oh.
Hey, Rick, how many of these shows have we ever done?
How many have we ever done?
We've been done a lot of them.
We've done quite a few. We've done a couple.
Yeah. Sometimes when you get people like this coming on your show, you still get a little bit.
You get them butterflies.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. When Buzzy and Wayne Jr. came walking in earlier tonight, I couldn't think of anything to say right there at the moment.
Except
welcome.
All right.
Now it's time.
It's time, Rick. Take it over, man.
Sitting at the table with us right now, Wayne Sr., Wayne Jr., and, of course, the immortal Buzzy Ruderman. How you guys doing tonight?
We're just fine so far.
I'm going to tell you what, Buzzy.
We haven't made anybody mad yet, right?
Not yet. To me, you're a legend. I mean, you are a legend in the sport, but it goes way back for me. And a lot of people called it Orange County. I called it Middletown. Up in New York State, with you and Will Cagle, the battle you guys used to put on that racetrack was just—it was unreal. And I was just a little kid up in the drive-in seats.
I tell you what, we're very happy to be here tonight. You know that we was on the way down here, and with the traffic and everything, I got to thinking that sometimes it's safer on the racetrack than it is running down the highway
there
out
go.
There. Of course, we had Wayne Jr. driving us down here, so I'm a little bit worried about that.
He was riding with me.
Now, you just came from Indianapolis, right?
Yes, up to Indianapolis for the weekend. We run the Silver Crown car there with Wayne at it on Thursday night. Rather not talk about that too much. we finally got things going. The car wouldn't agree with us. It did everything that it wasn't supposed to do, and we finally worked it around there and got it where he could. Well, we just told him to do the best he could with what he had, and he was really doing a terrific job with it. Clear up to seventh spot, and I think we were working on sixth spot right towards the end, and had an electrical problem with the engine, and it decided it didn't want to go any farther with eight laps to go. So we didn't really want it to happen that way, but had a did not finish there on that deal. But it worked out good. He's still leading the points in the USAC series, so that wasn't too bad. And of course, then we moved over to the Saturday night deal with David in the Busch car, and that got rather complicated. But with the rain they had up there, he had to get that green to practice his car, and while he was over to the Speedway practicing the Cup car, and Green did a good job. He qualified the Busch car in sixth place for David, so we knew we had a real good car there. But then when David came over from the Speedway, they had moved the with the rain and everything, they moved the qualifying time back to 5:30 at the Speedway, so that way David couldn't qualify the Busch car. So that's why Green had to qualify for that, and then that made David have to go last with the Busch car, but he got both cars in the race. He didn't find out that he was in the race at Indianapolis until he was on the helicopter on the way over. And David said if he didn't make the show at Indy, he was going to jump out of the helicopter. So I'm glad he made the show. But he did a fantastic job there at IRP with the Busch car. Wound up with a third spot coming from dead last.
So
he put on quite a show there.
Yeah. Now, what's it like, he didn't have the greatest day Sunday, but what's it like to go see him race at the big track at Indianapolis?
Well, it took me back, who would ever believe we would be at Indianapolis Speedway? That's just something you watch on TV or read in the paper about. We first walked in that garage area, and one of the guys says, this place has ghosts. It has so much history there. It's just some magnetism in the air, and you just feel it in the people. There was thousands and thousands of people there just to watch the practice session. I said, geez, well, how many is going to be here for the race? And there were thousands and thousands, thousands and thousands for the race. But, you know, just being able to be in pit road and where there's so many legends have been there, it just David and I, we stood on the front straightaway there when for the race introduction, you know, we was starting to get in the car. And it was just unbelievable feeling.
It was unreal just to watch it. I mean, I can remember the first time when they brought the Cup cars to Indianapolis that we never thought that would ever happen. Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine what your emotions were watching David go around that track.
Yeah, they're sort of hard to explain, the emotions. Well, I walked out on the front straightaway there when he was getting ready to go out for his first practice, and I stood down towards the first corner there, and to see that car coming down there at 200 miles an hour, it's an awesome feeling. You know, they had the numbers up on the wall there, you know, the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 for the lift point, because the straightaway is so long, drivers have to have something to judge it by. And so here come David down there, and he went clear past the one like he wasn't supposed to do, I don't think, but he made it around the corner. So it was quite a feeling there.
Buzzy, take us back a little bit. I mean, what was it like growing up, your second generation Ruderman? What was it like when you first got that bug that you knew that this was what you wanted to do?
Well, I don't know if either Wayne or Wayne Jr. or myself here or even David ever decided that that's what we was going to do or wanted to do. It's just that's what we did. It wasn't that we didn't have a choice, but that's we just grew up. That's what we wanted to do. We wanted to race cars, and so we just. That's just what we did. It wasn't like, say, when we was growing up, hey, I'm going to be a fireman when I grow up, or I'm going to be an astronaut or something like that. We just took it for granted. That's what we was going to do. We were going to race cars. And I think that also goes is David's thought behind that, too. I don't think that he ever decided that he was going to be a NASCAR driver and go up north. We just raced because that's what we love to do.
Right.
I've been told a lot of times, gosh, you guys would race even if they didn't pay anything. And you know, I believe we would.
You probably have, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done that a lot.
Wayne, my favorite pictures of you is standing on the front stretch at Golden Gate with that cowboy hat on right before the Florida 200, I believe it was, or the Governor's Cup. I mean, the intensity in your eyes getting ready for that race, it's an awesome shot.
Yeah, that 200-lap race there at Golden Gate Speedway used to be the biggest race in Florida. And whenever they give the Florida Governor's Cup to the winner of that race, and everybody in the country would show up for that race, Ed Howe and Dick Trickle and all the big wheels would come and join us in that race. And it was kind of an atmosphere that was, you know, different than what we did on a regular weekly night show, so it really added something to it.
It really transformed Golden Gate Speedway from that regular Saturday night short track to the national exposure that it really deserved.
Definitely, it was. It was the biggest thing going, and like I say, drivers from all over the country would come down and run that race, and to be able to do good in that race was a real winner.
Now, you've raced everything. All of you guys have raced just about any kind of car that you could race. What's your favorite, Wayne?
Well, I don't know that I got a favorite. As long as it's got wheels on it and you're competing with somebody, that's a race. Buzzy and I used to race bicycles around the gas pumps at our dad's Chevrolet dealership back when we were kids. We used to race tricycles. We used to race bicycles. We had gas pump speedway is what we called it. Whenever the shop would close down at night, we'd go out there and run them bicycles around and around up the gas pump island. And it's a wonder we didn't kill each other. And then we, on the weekends, we'd move the cars out of the shop. We had an open air. My dad had the Chevrolet dealership and had an open air shop. And we had go-karts, and we would actually wet the floor down in the shop and race go-karts around there inside. We'd go in one end of the stall, and we'd come back out in the alley in the other end of the stall. And we actually raced go-karts together. We run, I mean, anything that had wheels on, we was always racing.
There you go. Buzzy, what was the transition from when did you go from Florida to expanding to up north and other points?
Well, I knew I wanted to race. Wayne and I, neither one really enjoyed the Chevrolet dealership that my dad had. It was a deal there where we wanted to race, and of course we worked for our dad there. And back in '59 or so, when the warranty started with the cars, and it required so much paperwork, and we just didn't enjoy that. So I wanted to go racing. So I had made up my mind that I was going to go racing. Well, I think what really made me change my mind to go racing was one day Will Cagle stopped by the shop on his way up north, and he had two cars, and the taillights was out or something on the trailer, and he stopped by and wanted to know if we could help him fix the lights. So I went out there, and I looked at those cars of his on the trailer, and I thought, well, I can build something like that. And so he got to telling me, you know, they could race more than one night a week there. They could race on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I thought, well, that's great. That's what I wanted to do. So I looked at those cars over pretty close, and he left. So then I started building the car. And then the next year when he come by, in 1965, I think that was, or 64, he said, you can follow me and keep your cars in the same shop where I did. So off we went. And I had built that car just by looking at his car and then looking at the pictures and the Speedway news and stuff like that. So I made it look like their cars. And, of course, when I got up there, I was out to lunch with my setup. And, of course, we had ran on pavement so much. But I guess that's what got me going up north.
So Will Cagle basically got you on that roll
on
towards
that track,
up north, yeah.
Right, because we could race, you know, more times a week up there than what we could down here in Florida. And the pay was a little better, too.
Right, and, raced recently modified to the East Bay still. The modified scene has changed so much, you guys know. I mean, there's so many pictures out there of, like, the Gremlins, the Pintos. Those cars had to be hellacious just to drive those things, just the wheelbases, the narrowness, the offset engines and all that. It was crazy looking.
Well, yeah, we didn't think about that then. We just got in there and drove it. Sometimes we look at those old things that we used to drive, and we wonder why we're here today.
Wayne, did you get a lot of time in the old-style modifieds? Did you drive a lot of the old-style modifieds, the Pintos, the Gremlins, like that?
Yes. When I went up north, Buzzy got me the ride up there with Paul Blair in a number 3, and it was a 36 Chevrolet coupe body on a frame with a 454 big block motor and fuel injection, and he got me the ride up there, and I went up and started running Middletown and Nazareth with it, and I think I was second week there, I put it in the wall at Nazareth, and I thought, well, I'm going to have to come home after that. But we went ahead and stuck it out and did real good. Buzz and I was talking about the Eastern States 200 a while ago, and we're both guaranteed starters if we went back up there and run the Eastern States this year. So we're maybe looking for a ride to go back and try that.
Now, that would be awesome. That would be an awesome deal. Would you do it if you got a ride, Buzzy?
Oh, yes. We're sort of working on that already.
They'd have to have red so they could both have a little water break every now and then.
Wayne, Junior, when did you get started? When did it bite you?
Like they said, you know, you never realize when it happens. It just happens, you know. I always tell people in interviews and things like that, when your dad's a basketball coach, you play basketball. When your dad's a baseball coach, you play baseball. My whole life, I went to the racetrack. So, I mean, you know, when your heroes are sliding around out there on the racetrack, you don't want to do anything else. I mean, I played baseball and basketball and football and all that stuff. But, I mean, first time you sat in a race car, it kind of opens your eyes to, wow, this is really cool. And I guess when you're younger, it's like, hey, chicks pretty much dig this sale. So
right.
That works out, too, pretty good. But, it's just something that happens. You don't think about it. You just do it because that's all you've been around and that's all you really, you know, prepare yourself for. You know, like I said, I've always told them, man, you got to make sure you race and make money to do it because I've never prepared myself to be something other than a race car driver. You know, I'm not cut out to go to the bank and be a banker or something like that. That's not my style, you know, as far as doing a job. So, you know, good Lord willing, hopefully this racing thing works out for a little while longer.
It's got to be an awesome feeling to grow up in a family like this. I mean, a close, tight-knit family, and you walk outside, and there's got to be a ton of race cars all around your property. Do you still got a lot of the old cars?
Well, we haven't been able to save too many of our old cars. I think we saved more of David's than anything else. We'd have his sportsman car sitting over in the shed. And there's a couple of my cars up north. There's one in the museum up there at Weedsport, New York, one of my coupes. And every now and then someone calls up and say, I have one of your old coupes. Can I get a couple pictures of it so we can restore it back to the way it was? So there's two or three of them up north in the works. But if we've known... Now, well, you know, knowing a little, had a little bit more foresight, we could have saved some of those old cars we had, and they would really been quite a treasure right now.
You'd have quite the museum.
I don't know how many 37 Chevys or and 55 Chevys and 57 Chevys we cut up and made race cars out of. But golly, some of them were in pretty good shape before we got a hold of them.
There you go. Jack, you want to take a quick break here?
It's that time.
And we'll be right back.
That's that time.
CarNag.com, your online racing community since 1997. CarNag.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than CarNag.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, CarNag gets it done.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Race fans! Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drani, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today. 5starbodies.com.
We are back, Real Racing USA, right here live at the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East in Bradenton, Florida. We are here with the Rudemans, Wayne Sr., Wayne Jr., and, of course, Buzzy. Buzzy, we've seen a lot of race. I've seen a lot of race cars come and go with the double zero, but there's a history and there's a story with that double zero. What is that?
Yeah, that double zero, the number goes back quite a ways. That is something that my dad came up with when he was building his first cars back then. It had to be in the 40s because, you know, I don't even know if I was around yet or not. When they used to run hot rods back then, they used to call them. And the only thing there was just a motor and a steering wheel and a seat. They didn't even have roll cages or anything. They would just take the body off, and that was the hot rods, they called them there. And I guess some of the pictures I see of my dad, they just go and run in the field. Some of the racetracks are all dusty and everything. But anyway, my grandfather walked by, or my dad's dad walked by when my dad was building it and looked at it. I guess he just walked by and glanced at it when he looked at it and said it. He told Dad, he said that was the nearest thing to nothing he had ever seen. So Dad put the two zeros on there for double nothing, and that's been basically a family number for years and since the beginning. And it's quite an honor to carry that double zero number. I think it's known all over the world just about. I've even had people write me letters from Europe wanting to know if it was all right if they would put the double zero on their little car they run over there in Europe. So they are, the double zero number is quite known, and I can't be more prouder than David driving a double zero now on a NASCAR circuit. It seems really, really unbelievable that it would come full circle like that.
Full circle, and it made its laps around Indianapolis this weekend.
Yeah, that's really very cool. Really is.
Cool. Rick, we have a caller on the line.
Okay.
Caller, you got a question for Buzzy Rudeman or Wayne or Wayne Jr.?
I got a question for all three of these guys. My question is favorite race that you can remember and your favorite racetrack for all three of these guys.
Well, that's a hard question to answer. We raced at so many tracks, and we enjoy racing all of them. It's hard to pick out any one racetrack that we enjoy running the most. I think sometimes it'd be easier to pick out the ones we don't like to run.
Wayne Jr.'s smiling about something over there.
It just cracks me up how political Uncle Buzzy is. Uncle Buzzy's like, well, you know. No, Buzzy didn't ask you that. He asked you which one's your favorite. Just tell him, you know. But he's like, oh, well, I don't want to make anybody mad. No, mine's Ocala Speedway. I love Ocala Speedway. I love going there. It, you know, probably second on the list would be Inverness, but that's my favorite place to go. But
and what an unusual track to run a sprint car at.
Well, it's because I started there in a mini stock. I run in a dirt when it was dirt. When I ran a mini stock there, and that's just where I went, man. David went there, and they tagged me along there, and it's just a place to go, and I just enjoy going to Ocala and have loved going to there as many times as I could. But as far as favorite race goes, it would have to be, I think it was my second race ever in a sprint car. And my dad was driving a 22, and I was driving my car, and we were at Punta Gorda, or Charlotte County Speed, or whatever you want to call it. And we were starting a heat race, and we were both starting last, like we were on the last row. I think I was on the inside, dad was on the outside. And dad comes over to me, and he's talking to me, and he's like, I'm getting in. He's like, all right, now look, you only got to finish like fifth, so just take your time. You got 8 laps, just whip through there, and you'll be fine. And you transfer, and you get your transfer spot or whatever, you know. Said, all right, Pop, I'll do that, you know. And man, we lined up there, and we scrubbing the tires a little bit, and dad was on my outside there, and we come off the corner, and man, they dropped the green, and I stood on the gas and drove in there a little bit, and I swear it, man. Old man's car just turned sideways and to the bottom and to back to the top, and he was leading the race on the back straightaway. And I was like, well, what the heck happened to taking our time, you know? Well, I thought we were going to take our time in this deal, and, you know, and here he is leading the race on the back stretch. I'm like, well, I guess that didn't go for him. It just was for me. So, but that was probably the coolest, one of the coolest heat races anyway that I run.
That was cool. Wayne, what about you? What's your favorite track, favorite race?
I don't know that I've got a favorite racetrack. maybe the least favorite, but I like the big tracks. I like large tracks better than I do short tracks. I like New Smyrna and Lake City and the Pensacola and Mobile, Alabama, the half miles with some bank on them, where you can really get some speed and you can drive the car through the corners and I don't know, it just, you can do more with the car on a big track through the corners because you're in the corners longer than you can on a short track. And you can, you know, set people up and you can pass and it's a little more room to maneuver in. And I don't know, the speed's just a lot more fun.
Lake City and Pensacola, I mean, they're kind of like flat-footing tracks almost, right?
Pensacola and Mobile?
Yeah. Lake City, right. Lake City.
Yeah.
Columbia
yeah, Motorsports Lake City, Park.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mobile and Pensacola, with a sprint car, if it's right, you can run wide open all the way around.
That's flying. That's a half-mile racetrack. That's cruising. What kind of speeds do you think you're getting up to?
Probably 160 or better down the straightaway.
Oh, that's flying. Caller, you got any more questions?
The caller's gone.
Okay.
If somebody does want to call in, it's 941-748-3490.
748-3490. There you go. I've read up on you, Buzzy. I mean, there's so much stuff on you.
Hang on. You know, just let me
go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, it just makes it rougher and rougher at the shop. The more this legend crap we hear, just, you know, you come in the shop and you just got
to continuously
hear about this legend nonsense, and it's not helping anything at all.
Hey, Rick.
He's got that innocent smile right there.
Hey, Rick, were you up there with, I don't know if you were there that day, the first time I ever see Buzzy, of course, I'd read all the books, you know, the Florida pictorial history and all these things and heard about the legend, right? And Buzzy was racing at East Bay. It was the first time I saw you, and the race was going on, and you were running. Somehow or another, you were towards the back of the pack, and somebody hit you and spun you out, and I guess you took exception. This is only a few years ago. It was like 5 or 6 years ago. Somebody took exception. You took exception to the fact that you got spun out, and under caution, as you were coming down under the flag stand, you came up behind the guy and bumped him in the rear with your bumper, and everybody in the grandstand stood up and cheered. That was so cool. Yeah. It was a very popular thing to do.
Yeah, sometimes racing relieves a lot of emotions. I tell you, you know, it when you come out to the legend part, somebody come up with me winning something like 1,200 races or something like that. But what a lot of people don't realize, that Wayne's won more races than I have, because Wayne drives everything. Some of the things that Wayne used to get in, I would, you know, I've never won a race in a Hudson Hornet, and Wayne has, you know, because he has driven everything with wheels on it. And of the drivers in the family, Wayne is the best, one of the bunch. Now, there's no doubt about that, because I'm sort of particular what I get in. You know, I like to get in my own stuff. Wayne, he don't care. He'll go on anything.
Dad just don't have no sense. That's all. He doesn't got no sense. He don't care.
Brother Buzz is just being modest now. There's no comparison. There's no comparison. We both race with each other, and I don't think it's ever entered my mind who's better. Neither one of us are better than the other one. There's you can't go there.
Which makes it a true racing family. In the aspect of racing families, I mean that's what makes you guys what you are.
Of course, Wayne and I know that we'll never be as good as my dad was or our dad was. You know, he was the pinnacle. He's the one that we would try to pattern ourselves after, because he could wheel anything. He would, you know, those big sprint cars with Ranger airplane motors in them and no brakes on them when they go to the corner. They didn't even have hydraulic brakes, and those motors were 600 horsepower are better, and the things he could do, running the little 4-inch wide tires and stuff like that. It took real men to drive those cars, and I know we could never compare ourselves to our dad, so he had to be the best of the family.
He didn't have anybody working the track in for you or anything like that. You ran on what you ran on.
No, they didn't know what power steering was or brakes or a smooth track or anything like that.
Where'd you run the Hornet at?
Yeah, Golden Gate Speedway, of course. That thing was like a washtub turned upside down with wheels on it. But what was so strange about that, every once in a while it would break the rear axle. And the way the Hudson Hornet was designed, the body came over the tires, the outside of the tire. Well, when it would break an axle, it would go out from under the back of the car. And the first thing it'd do, it'd pitch the back of the car up in the air. And it's almost standing on its nose when it would break that axle, and then it'd come down and hit the racetrack and slide around. Sound like a bunch of marbles in a washtub whenever it was sliding around a racetrack and wind up stopping. But the gentleman that owned that Hudson, every once in a while they'd blow a head gasket in that warm-ups or something, and it was a flat head, and he could take the head off and change a head gasket on it before the heat race. And I seen him do that. And the first time I drove the car, I come walking in the pits and looked at it, and the right rear tire had a big cut in it, and it was sewn up with piano wire to make it work. And I said, okay. But getting back to driving everything and anything, I actually drove an all-aluminum race car one time. And, of course, now I wouldn't get in things like that but back then when I was younger, no sense, I guess, or just wanting to race real bad, maybe.
Yeah, we agreed on
what it was, but
no, you had it right
I actually drove
no
a
sense.
Car, the roll bars, the frame, the whole thing was made out of aluminum. It was built. Pete Crocker built the car, and he ran a prison camp shop down somewhere down south. I forget where it was now. But I think he used the signposts that you see on the interstate highways for the roll cage, and the frame was 4-inch aluminum square tubing. And believe it or not, I put it over the wall at Sunshine Speedway because the throttle hung on it going down the backstretch. And luckily, it didn't end over end. It left the front axle laying on the racetrack, and it went end over end. The only thing I got hurt was my shins got hurt when they went up under the dash when I was upside down. But then it come down outside the racetrack, going down the bank out there on all four, well, two wheels, because two of them was left on the racetrack. But what was left on it was, and it wound up out there. And you know something, a lot of people don't realize how dark it is out there whenever you go away from the lights. All the lights are shining towards the racetrack. Well, when I landed up there and it was dark out there and it was in the bushes and the trees, I was afraid an alligator was going to get me or something out there at sunshine. But anyway, I went running back up the hill once I got out of it, and they about run over me coming to find out if I was all right.
That's wild.
Did you hear him, though? He proved my point. He said, luckily it went end over end. Right there, that's no sense. Who says luckily something went end over end?
That's not right.
Not anybody with any sense.
Well, what I was getting at earlier, though, is you've watched a lot of racetracks come and go in the state of Florida. Racing has changed completely, like the old Ugalle racetrack where they had the 500-lap race where you and your dad raced, I believe it was, and you won by 32 laps, I think.
Yeah,
it was.
That was quite a race that we had there. I think there was 33 cars, and I think there was 32 Fords and our one six-cylinder Chevy there. And Dad drove half the race, and I drove half the race, and Dad started the race, and he had quite a lead there for me before I got in, and all I had to do was just finish the other 250 laps, and
we had to finish the other 250.
That was a good night. Boy, they paid a whopping $500 to win that race, too. So that was big money back then.
500 laps, $500, dollar a lap. Well, how could you go wrong, right?
What could we go?
But at one point, I mean, the state was covered in racetracks. There was so many racetracks. I believe at one time 45, 50 racetracks here, and progressively they have just faded away. What do you think is behind that?
That is one of the things that is a depressing thought, is the racetracks that we're losing. And you know, through development, the land becomes more valuable for houses than it does racetracks. And you know, a lot of the it's a hard thing to say or be diplomatic about it, but a lot of it is through lack of promotion from the promoter's standpoint. You can't just build something and they will come. You have to work at it like a job. And I think that's the reason we have lost some of our racetracks, because of lack of promotion.
Well, and also back then there wasn't as much competition for the entertainment dollar as we have now.
That's true there. We didn't have the...
It requires more promotion now than it did perhaps before. More expertise in promotion than perhaps it did before.
That's true there, right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's hard to beat a promoter like Frank Derry was with Gordon Solie and stuff like that. They could make... Gordon Solie could make a race if there was only two cars running out there. I would love to see more of that happen in the tracks around here. But people can watch it race it on TV and be having the comfort of their home nowadays. And some of the tracks we have need to be cleaned up with better restrooms. And a lot of people don't realize that there's nothing like being there, though. The noise and the exhaust smell and stuff like that. It's nothing like being there. I think if promoted correctly, we would probably have more racetracks than what we do.
Absolutely. And, you know, we had opened the show with this gentleman that's promoting this new television network that's, supposed to take local racing and put that on TV. And I myself don't think that's a great idea because, like you said, there's nothing to compare being there.
Right, that's true. There's just like being at Indianapolis the other day.
I can't imagine what that was like.
Hundreds of thousands of people there. You can feel electricity in the air, and there's nothing like just being there. There's nothing that I'm going to enjoy more than like going down to East Bay on Saturday night and just being there and seeing and taking part of it. It's more exciting that way.
You've got a ton of history at East Bay. I mean, you've been racing there a long time.
Yeah, we've been around there a few times. Yeah, I think when we started out there, I think when Jimmy Mingo took the fish camp out of there and built the racetrack and started with our late models, and now I've got we run late models for years and different type of cars. And one of my proudest moments at East Bay is to watch back when Wayne ran. The World Outlaws came down each year, and Wayne had a car that was sponsored by J.B. Gordon, and he made the show every night, and I think he even set fast time one time against the Outlaws. That one, you know, when Doug Wolfgang and Opperman and all those guys were running the car. And if those guys had known what motor Wayne had in their car, they would have been ashamed of themselves because it wasn't near the motor those other guys had. But Wayne put it in the show each night.
Is that local knowledge?
That's just the knowledge of East Bay.
Was that local knowledge,
right?
Wayne?
That's just the knowledge of getting around East Bay that got you in those shows. I mean.
Yeah, if you go around a racetrack enough times, you're bound to learn how to get around it sooner or later.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, years of going to East Bay and like Winter Nationals, you know, the guys that come from all over the country, all over the world, you can tell the ones that have been there before and, you know, that know when the tide comes in.
Yeah. A lot of times a problem with the local drivers we have down here, they get to run one night a week or, you know, not even that much, whereas the guys that come down and run at East Bay now, they'll run four or five nights a week. Right. And racing is just like any other sport. If you don't practice at it, you're not going to be any good. You can't name me a sport that the people don't practice, whether it's bowling or whether it's, the stick and ball games, baseball, basketball, football, they all practice. They all practice. They have practice time. Well, it's the same way with a race car. If you don't go out there and run lap after lap after lap, well, you lose your precision. You lose your precision, and you don't do as well as a guy that's going to do it four and five nights a week. So this is why you don't see our local guys go down there and do, you know, some of them do real well. Don't get me wrong there, but you don't see a lot of our guys go down there and jump on the guys that come down here that run four and five nights a week. And getting back to the promoters, let me go back there just a minute.
All right.
I should have jumped in a while ago. The trend I've seen with the promoters and racetracks is the promoters are trying to make their purse by the pits, the pit gate. They charge for slabs. They charge for... you have to buy the tires there. You have to, you know, they charge you for branding the tires. They charge you for your four-wheelers sometimes. And then they run 400 different classes because they know that the different classes bring three or four people with them every night to get in the pits, and then they charge you probably double what it should cost you to get in the pits. So then the promoter's making money right there, so he doesn't care about what comes in the grandstands. This is my own opinion now.
Right.
I'm probably, all the promoters around are going to shoot me, but this is what I've seen happen over the years. It seems like promoters have quit caring about getting folks in the stands. All they care about is how much money they can get from the poor race car driver and owners that come in the back gate. And this is what I have seen taking place, and this is why you see so many, you know, the people sit up there and watch four or five cars in four or five different classes run around a racetrack, whereas if they had put that money in a couple of good classes, the people would get a good show, and they'd be able to go home early at night and wouldn't sit there all night long watching three and four cars run around and try and make a race out of it. But I don't know how hard you hear them all say they can't make any money, but, this may be true. I don't know because I've never been a promoter. I've never been on that side of the fence. But this is just my opinion and what I have noticed.
Well, how many years have you been in racing? I mean, how many years have you
How many years have I been racing?
Yeah.
I'd have to stop and do the math.
You can't tell me I'm the first person to ever ask you that.
I was 15 years old and when I started right behind Buzzy. I'd had one. He gave me one of his motors and Dad gave me one of his old cars, and I put them together and started racing. And I was like 15 years old, and 14 or 15, I don't remember which, and I'm 62 now.
Yeah. And he outrun me with my own motor, too.
Well, hey, that's a damn shame.
Just some of the things people don't realize about my dad, and I mean, I probably shouldn't even talk about this. This is because it's my dad, and I'm proud of him. He's won races in the 50s, 60s. 70s, 80s, 90s, and even in 2000s. You know, how many people can say that they've won races in all
none,
those?
None that I know of.
You know what I mean? So that just, you know, that just says something
none
about
that I
the
know of.
Type of race car driver he is.
Go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Rick, hang on just a second.
I got another question for Wayne and Buzzy real quick. You see, nowadays, all these young kids are starting out in late models and trucks and stuff like that. You talked about how you took one of his motors, one of your dad's old cars, you built the car. I mean, you guys, you know, basically did all your mechanic work, pretty much, setups and all that stuff, and took them to the tracks. Do you think the youth of today is too spoiled as getting into these late models and cars like that right now?
A lot of them are. A lot of them wouldn't know a nut or a bolt from one end or the other. Now, some of them work on their own cars and have come up working with their fathers and that have raced and worked on their cars that way. But a lot of them have the money to where they can buy. See, now, this is the difference between when we started out and when somebody starts out now. You can go buy a car complete. I mean, just get you a helmet and a uniform and go race, and that car will be pretty well set up to go around a racetrack.
Right, right.
Whereas before, we used to build them from scratch and put everything on them and have to do everything ourselves. Well, you couldn't run down to the local speed shop. There wasn't no such thing as a speed shop and buy the equipment that you can buy now. So this makes a difference, too, in the young people being able to get in a car that is race-ready. Whereas the ones, you know, now they can do that, whereas before you couldn't.
Do you think Rick, one more thing. Do you think that may be what's instilled the success in you guys?
Definitely. You got to be able to feel what a car is doing and understand what's happening to a race car to be a good driver. We have driven cars long enough now to where we can pick up different smells.
Mm-hmm.
You can smell a car when the engine oil is going out. You can smell a car when it's got a water leak. You can smell it when it's got an oil leak. You know, when you drive one for so long, you become one with the car, and you can tell the owner of the car, or whatever, say, you know, this car's got a miss in it. The motor's not running right, that's hard to come by unless you have the experience.
There you go.
And they taught us the same way. I mean, there was no silver spoon crap going on at our house. I mean, when I had my mini stock, you know, yeah, I'd sleep till noon, but every kid does. But when I got up in the morning after I raced on Friday night, there was a list on on the chalkboard in the garage, and Dad would say, hey, if you want to race next Friday, you need to get that done. And he'd go sit on the couch. And it was one of those deals where it's like, all right, well, I guess if I'm going to race, yeah, I need to go ahead and get this done. And, right, you know, things that I needed help with, he'd come out and help me with. But, you know, he'd make the list, and it was up to us. And that's the same way they did with David. And that's just how we all learned, and that's, you know, it's just better to do that. You know, sometimes it sucks when you're working on your race car on Friday night and all your buddies are partying. But
if that's,
you know,
what you want to do, that's,
yeah,
what you're,
it just
do,
makes it makes you that much better.
Right.
And we're going to talk to David Ruderman in just a few minutes. Right now, Scotty McAllister was going to be one of the co-hosts with us here tonight, and he couldn't make it down from Ocala. But he's on the line with us now, and I guess he had a question or two for.
No, I just really had some comments. First of all, I just want to say it's great and you guys on there, Florida. You guys couldn't have posted or featured any better ambassadors to racing that Florida can feature than what you have right there in the room out there. And it's congratulations to all those guys. And Buzzy, I remember the first time, I was a couple of stories about Buzzy. I remember the first time I met him was with a guy, and then see if you remember Sentimental Bob when we went out to Lanier. Do you remember him, Buzzy?
Who did you say?
I didn't click. I
said Sentimental Bob when we used to go out there with Wayne, with Michael Falk and all them.
Oh, yeah, I know Bob, yeah.
Oh, Sentimental Bob, he still thinks, and once again, he should say, if you don't think Buzzy's a legend, just ask him.
Yeah, Bob and I got along just fine.
The first time I ever saw Buzzy race, and he came off at Turn 4 East Bay, one of the first times I've ever been to East Bay, he bumped this boy, and I said, God, Buzzy, after the race was over, I said, God, Buzzy kind of ran that guy over coming on Turn 4. And all the Ruderman family, they're all so nice and easy sounding out of the car. And Buzzy goes, well, I didn't mean to do that, but you know what? I had a good run. And I said, well, God, you kind of ran him over. Yeah, but you know what? I just didn't mean to do that. And they're all so nice and soft-spoken. And then they put that helmet on, they turn into madmen. But it's good to that. I'm sorry I couldn't make it, but I did want to call and say, once again, great ambassadors and glad y'all could be on the show.
Thanks for letting me call in.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scotty.
All right, your contract will be extended another year, Scotty.
Another week, anyway.
We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Jack, we'll take a quick break. It's top of the hour.
You know, and before we go to the break, right, we're going to be talking to David here hopefully in a few minutes if the everything works out all right up at the airport. But, you know, when you guys had the big party up there when the Waltrips came down and to do the big announcement thing, and Bill Green went up and covered the event for us and did a lot of recording, and we played the one interview, the one little clip over and over on the various shows we've done where David talked about how hard it was, you know, the times when it was really, really lean. And when we come back, maybe we can touch on that a bit, and we'll be back in just a minute.
I know someone there for Harold and Gene Fisher out of Plant City at Golden Gate. And there was a 230 Chevrolet and all the pipes.
Hi, I'm Paulie Milam, driver of the number 42 Sprint Car at East Bay, TBARA, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Race fans! Columbia Motorsports Park in Lake City would like to invite you to join us on August the 25th as we pay tribute to a true Florida racing legend, Cecil Williams, for the Cecil Williams Memorial Super Late Model 100. Join us as we welcome some of the best late model drivers in the Southeast as they do battle on the fastest half-mile track in Florida. Daryl Shelnut, Timmy Russell, Patrick Williams, Justin Drawney, and more will be on hand for the 100-lap feature event, the Cecil Williams Memorial 100. For more information, check out ColumbiaMotorsportsPark.com or call 352-804-0078. That's 352-804-0078. The Cecil Williams Memorial 100 at Columbia Motorsports Park, August the 25th. Columbia Motorsports Park is located just off I-75 on exit 414 on Highway 41 in Lake City, Florida.
All right, Rick. We're back, man.
Real Racing USA. Back here live at the Snook River Grill. We're just having too much fun here at Rudiment Night at the Snook River Grill. A decent crowd of people here. And the stories these guys, we can just go on and on and on. But on the phone right now, he's made the step upstairs. We've got with us David Rudiment. David, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing good. How you doing tonight?
Oh, man, we're just having too much fun with your family here.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. telling stories, man.
Yeah, there's probably a lot to be told, and I hope they're not telling too many at my expense. You know, that's what I'm hoping.
No, we're just heading that chapter right now.
So,
did you guys tell him that y'all interviewed Loeffler first? They called Loeffler a while ago, Dave, and they said they talked to him first.
I just knew it was going to start with that somehow.
Yeah, we know who's got the real sense of humor in this family tonight. We figured that out already.
Yeah, he's that's about the only kind of sense he's got.
David, we've been talking about how growing up with the Rudiment name and how you had to work on your own race car. You had to, it was blood, gut, sweat every Saturday to get to the track. Tell us a little bit about your side of that.
I think the common misconception was that the Rudiment family was just loaded with money, and we just sat around all day and had people working on a race car, and we just showed up on the weekend and raced, that was just not even remotely, what it was about. None of us really had, we raced for a living, majority of us did. So, how much money could you have if you're racing for a living, in all reality? So, it's just, it was a good life. It's a life I think most of us chose. But on the other side of the deal is, required a lot of work, a lot of commitment, and a lot of eating bologna sandwiches and stuff like that. But, not that much different than a lot of racers do on a weekly basis, guys that are living it on the local short tracks. They make sacrifices to get to the races every weekend, and then, we were no different. We just seemed to, the only difference was it seemed like the whole family seemed to do it.
Now, how did you get your break? How did you first climb up there into the NASCAR era?
I had his name's been brought up tonight, it probably has, but, Brian Patty, who's basically, for all intents and purposes, he might as well be a Rudiment because he's been around us. And my cousin Sean, Wayne Jr., my dad, he's always been around, and he was my crew chief on my dirt car whenever I was, racing in Florida, and on my pavement car and stuff like that. And I went to New York to race, and he went to North Carolina to be a crew chief. And, he was having a whole lot more success being a crew chief than I was racing in New York. So I come back to Florida, and, he's still in North Carolina, being a crew chief for Joe Nemechek, and I think he finally bothered Joe enough to where – Joe said, all right, because I'll let this guy, I'll let this guy have a shot, but, I got a car here. He's going to have to come up with the money to buy the car because, it was a new car, but it was different than the rest of Joe's cars, and he wanted to keep everything the same. So, he buy this car, I'll put a motor deal together for him and put a sponsor together for him for one race, and we'll take our team and with all our stuff and go race, which is as good a deal as you could ask for, really. So, family friend, a fellow by the name of Buddy Smith there in Zephyrhills, Florida. He had sold off the property, and he had the money. He bought the car for me, and Joe, true to his word, put things together. We went to Richmond with Brian Patty as my crew chief, and Geico as a sponsor on using Joe's team, and we showed up there and got in the race and finished 16th. We were like the last car in the lead lap of my first Busch race. So, and that was all due in part to the fact that I had a really, really good team behind me with a good car. And from that point on, Joe kind of started trying to do stuff for me and helping me out. Taking me testing and putting another one race deal together for me, only driving his car this time. And, we were able to run well, again, because Joe's stuff always seemed to run well. And it got noticed by Darrell Waltrip. And then, obviously went to the truck series with him and kind of progressed with the rest of the Waltrip family. I was I was kind of moved from one Walter brother to the other one, and it just kind of gone from there. So it sounded like it happened overnight, but there was a lot of years in between there that things didn't seem to be going so good.
You know, to me, still the Truck Series is the backbone of NASCAR. It's the best series to me in NASCAR. But tell us what it's been like. Well, how much has your life changed since you made the move to NASCAR, to the big time?
You go to the Truck Series, and it's a lot different than the late model stuff I've been running, and obviously, you got sponsor commitments, and you got things you have to do, and that are different than what you normally, are normal to be doing. But then as you go farther up the ladder, there's more commitments on your, you have more commitments, more things are asked of you and your time and stuff like that. And it is kind of how it is. And I think us, everybody as a family, I mean, sure, it's a lot to do, and it's a lot different, going from the Truck Series to the Busch Series to the Cup Series. The Truck Series and the Busch Series are more similar to one another as far as time demands and schedules and stuff like that. But, the Cup Series is its own deal. But I think all of us as a family, you work so hard to get to a point. You don't really complain about doing that stuff. You just accept it as being part of the business, and kind of know going in that it's going to be different. And if you get the opportunity to do that, you're getting an opportunity that even though you're doing stuff that you may not be the most fun thing to do in the world, you still got the greatest job in the world, which is driving a race car on Sundays and getting paid to do it. So at the end of the day, that's kind of what matters.
And speaking of that Sunday, what's the pressure like on Sunday at the level of the Nextel Cup?
Cup racing is, there's a lot of pressure there. The most pressure I think I feel is on the race weekend is on Fridays or whatever qualifying day we have. That's when the pressure is, because you need to get in the show before you can even think about doing anything else. But it's not really that much different than I feel like pressure Wayne Jr. gets under when he goes out for a Silver Crown car. As he's racing for a living, got a family to support, try to make a name for himself, and you feel like you have to perform every time you go out there. And that stays the same as you go up. It's a situation where you're every week you're trying out for something different. I think that's kind of the mentality a lot of us have had, and you never know who's looking or who's watching, and so you want to go out there and put your best foot forward. And when you're trying to scrape out a living out of racing cars at a local level or even at the USAC level, you need to go out there and perform. So the pressure, it starts early on. I think at least in our family it does, because all of us expect, we all want this really bad, and we expect a lot of ourselves and one another. So the pressure just kind of stays the same. It escalates some, but the pressure's kind of there the whole time.
I got to ask you, did you really ride around the track with that bone hanging out the window?
No, only for commercials, man. Believe it or not, it took me about 8 hours one day to do that little spot of commercial there. So I definitely found out that I'm probably not cut out for any type of acting whatsoever. So I just stick to the racing. And although they did show my best feature, which was me wearing my helmet. I look best wearing my helmet.
One thing that you can say about doing all those commercials and stuff, I mean, everybody in the state of Florida who's done any kind of racing or sat in the grandstands anywhere knows the Rudiman name. Of course, we've known you racing cars, but mostly the fans in the stands, we only get to see you guys, with helmets on and stuff. Everybody knows what David Rudiman looks like now.
Yeah, I'm not really so sure, I'm sure nobody's fully thrilled.
Yeah, because he's a looker, let me tell you.
The thing that I have to fall back on at the end of the day is I still know that I look way better than any of my cousins, actually. That I really enjoy it.
Just a secret that really nobody knows about is that Bell actually builds special helmets for David because his nose is actually so big. On a standard size helmet, it'll actually hit the mouthpiece. So they have a special mold for David, that they send, and it's just for him specially. That's what happens when you get famous.
Well, there's something else I can add to that. Randy LaJoy builds a lot of seats up here, and actually, he has the special booster seat edition for Wayne Jr. LaJoy actually has to. Wayne Jr. seats cost a little more than the rest, just because there's a lot more in them. You know, that's kind of how it works.
Now we know what it was like growing up to be a Rudiment. Yeah.
Oh, my.
The reason I'm like I am is because I'm the youngest, and they used to beat me on a daily basis. Yeah. So that's why I'm ornery and a pain in the butt generally.
Well, David, you know, I mean, making the trip, you know, going from the trucks up to the Nextel Cup, I mean, you were in a pretty special position. I mean, it's obviously it's a good position, but you're under a little bit more pressure beginning at the beginning of this year than the average guy coming up to the Cup level because of the fact that you're going with the whole new Toyota deal. I mean, did that add what kind of dimension did that add to your experience?
Well, I mean, the pressure to get into races is there no matter what you're driving, and you know, and I think people expect a lot of Toyota when we came in. You know, expected to come in and just kind of roll over the whole program. Change NASCAR. I heard all the gloom and doom, you know, and I'm like, you know, there's nobody outside, with the exception of maybe, you know, I know Jack Roush was never a big fan, but, you know, most people didn't, you know, within the race NASCAR community knew better because there's too many good teams and too many solid manufacturers that have been doing this for too long. And you know, we've come in and we've had our struggles, no doubt. So, you know, the pressure was there because everybody's watching you to see if you're going to screw up or what you're going to do. And, you know, in a lot of instances, I've given people plenty to watch because I've done, you know, a lot of it this year. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's kind of it's a double-edged sword. Everybody's expecting a lot. Everybody, you know, expects you to do this. And then all of a sudden, the Toyota program, you know, we've had our struggles and our ups and downs, and everybody's wanting to know what's wrong. It's like, well, you know, this is kind of tough, you know. It's not easy. You know, it's not like anything we've done, you know, and it shows. But I do know that Toyota has a ton of commitment and the personnel to with the work ethic that'll get us to where we need to be. So, you know, my goal is to, you know, kind of solidify myself here, and, you know, within Toyota because they've been very good to me, and I feel like they'll get there, and hopefully that'll open up some opportunities for some other things, and a possibility of maybe doing some market stuff for Wayne Jr. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we kicked around. And I do know that I think I can be I can end up being a pretty good car owner because, you know, I've been on both sides of the fence. And then I know if I hire Wayne Jr., I can probably pay him like $50 a race or something. And
Sucker's going to undercut me is what he's going to do. He's not even going to be like, here's a hot dog, kid, $5. See you later.
We'll put your name on the side of the car. But with that, you know, you're talking about Toyota. What do you attribute Toyota's struggling in the Cup Series, but as far as in Busch and in truck, I mean, they're doing fantastic.
Yeah, well, you know, a large part of that is the fact is the motor program is virtually the same in the Truck Series and the Busch Series. They're both the same motor for all intents and purposes. Spacer plate underneath the carburetor, as far as height is concerned, is a little bit different in the truck versus the Busch cars. But other than that, they took the motor out of the truck, put it in the Busch car, and went racing with it, you know, aside from a couple little small changes. So you had a motor that was tried and true, performing in the Truck Series, bringing it over to the Busch Series, right out of the box. The thing makes good power. It's everything you need. They've worked on the torque curve. You know, they've run it through the ringer, and it's reliable. You have all those things, and it's a good piece, all right? So then you go to the Cup side, and it's a completely different motor. Heads are different. Valve angle's different. You know, it's completely different. The heads are different. The block is designed different. You know, it's just not even the valve covers are not even, they don't, you know, you can't put one valve cover off of one onto the other. Just completely different look, just even from the outside. So what you have there is a motor that hasn't been tested all that much. I mean, it's been tested as much as you possibly can. And then you run into a situation where, you know, you need to put it on the racetrack to see how it performs. And then when it doesn't do what you think it ought to do, you're still trying to build motors to go to the racetrack week in and week out. Plus trying to reinvent the wheel and make the motor run better and pull where it's supposed to and do all those things. And it's a huge undertaking. And it's just not, it's again, like I said earlier, it's just not an easy, racing's not at this level, at any level, most cases is not easy, but especially at this level because all the talented teams that are out there, man, it's tough to make any ground.
Could I say something?
Go ahead.
You know, whenever you're behind the scenes, say like when you're in the pits there at Indianapolis or any of the pits where they're working on the Cup car or the Busch car, Like David said, there's a lot of difference in the two motors. For instance, at Indianapolis the other day, you have your speed trap deal set up for straightaway speeds. Well, say Tony Stewart or Jeff Gordon or one of the guys can go down to straightaways in 11.8 one-hundredths of a second. David's straightaway speed would be like 11.23 one-hundredths of a second. So we're losing so many one-hundredths of a second on each straightaways because of the speed. Now, a Toyota motor will make 900 horsepower, same as a Chevrolet and the Ford and the Dodge. They're a peak horsepower, 900. But right at the moment, the Toyota torque curve is 10 horsepower off from the Chevy, the Ford, and the Dodges from the, off the corner to the peak. They both make 900 horsepower, but so that's where we're hurting in the Toyota program right now. We're in the Bush, you know, we're all equal to everybody else. That's what the difference in the Bush and the Cup. And people, you know, it's just a lot of that goes on behind the scenes that people don't realize. Oh, boy, the Toyota's not running fast, but the engineers are working on it. Now, David had a piston problem there the last couple races. Well, that's because they're in experimental mode on intake manifolds, and it might where a lot of the power is being made, and it's leaning out some of the cylinders and causing the pistons to melt. So, but their engineers are working on that. So the bad part about it is David has to be the R&D driver on this deal rather than being one that's got the same amount of horsepower and runs a whole race. So. But David has to go through the corners faster to make up what he loses down the straightaway. So that's some of the problem right at the moment that people don't really see.
There you go. That's a good explanation.
Yeah,
right there.
Very, very tight competition in all the major sports, all of them. When you get to the top level, the competition between the difference in winning and losing is just very, very small.
Yeah, right.
And David talks about, you know, pressure. You should be around David when he has to try to get that car in the show. You talk about trying to get the car in the show at Indianapolis, and he didn't know he was in the show. They was helicoptering him over from the speedway over to IRP to run it, and he was afraid he was going to jump out of the helicopter if he didn't make the show. So even at Wayne and I's age. We put a certain amount of pressure on ourselves when we got there. You get uptight before a race. It's just part of what you do because you want. And sometimes we put more pressure on ourselves because I think some people expect us to win. And when they expect you to win when you've done a song, that makes it a little bit rougher. And it takes some of the enjoyment out of it, believe it or not. Because when you go out there and you line up in the back, you say, "Oh man, I've won this race." And I don't want to disappoint the fans, so you try extra hard. So you're putting more pressure on yourself to do good. And I think no matter what, where we run, even Wayne here, I know he, I don't even talk to him for a race.
Well, that's exactly what Dick Anderson said a couple of weeks ago when we interviewed him. He said exactly what you just said. Right. Yeah.
Well, you ought to try being their kid.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I couldn't even imagine.
It doesn't matter if you've never seen the place or what car you're in. People expect you to win because they've seen your dad do it, and they've seen your uncle do it, and they've seen David do it, and all this other nonsense. But, you know, people just expect it. And, you know, and that's why sometimes before the race you might be a little keyed up. You don't really want to talk a whole lot. But, you know, once the race is over, then we can shoot the breeze and have a good time.
David, you're now in a position where people race car drivers of all ages, you're somebody that now people certainly look up to because you're at the pinnacle of where all these guys want to go. And we always ask successful race car drivers this question. And what kind of advice would you give somebody who's 16, 17, 18 years old who's trying to get where you are? What's the best kind of advice that you could give somebody in that position?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been asked that a lot. You know, start off with, you know, in all honesty, Wayne Jr.'s always looked up to me because he's so short. He looks up about everybody.
He ain't giving you no slack, man.
No, I'm trying to be easy on him because he's everybody's hero.
The problem is there's no clear-cut way. There's no clear-cut path to getting to the show or whatever you want to call the deal. I mean, you know, you've seen all kinds of guys have done it. Some guys have done it through USAC and Silver Crown races. Some guys have done it. You got guys like Robbie Gordon and and maybe Jimmy Johnson, who've done desert truck racing, and then, you know, evolve from there. I mean, the main deal, I think the main advice I give everybody is get a good education, you know, be well-spoken, you know, take speaking courses and do all the things you need to do to be well-spoken, because it's not all about just driving anymore. You have to represent the company that's on the side of your car, and you have to do it.
Don't worry if you're funny looking, because he made it.
Which really kind of leaves me out in most cases. But, you know, and you just have to just do everything you do, do it in a professional manner. I mean, whether you're racing, whatever you're racing, if you're racing a pure stock at your local racetrack or whatever, you know, show up there, you know, try to be professional in everything you do. And you know, that just kind of, you know, be confident, but don't be overly confident, and just try to, you know, pay your dues and keep going. And there's no clear-cut path, you know, just hopefully somewhere, sometime, just like happened to me, you know, I just was in the right place at the right time. Same thing, you know, whether my dad or my uncle or my cousin, whatever path, you know, my dad and my uncle, you know, if they would have chosen a little bit different path, they could have been, you know, wearing Richard Petty out on a regular basis. But they went to a path that at that time was you know, a sure thing, which was, you know, they're trying to support families and make a living at it. When NASCAR was in its early stages, it didn't look like it was that sure a thing. I always tell my dad, I said, yeah, good call, Pop. I think you made the right call there. But, you know, with that being said, man, you know, you just do everything you do in a professional manner. Get as much education as you can. You know, try to learn. You know, if you can take college courses, you know, do that. Learn about engineering. Learn all those things. Make yourself a well-rounded driver. And, you know, sometimes you see engineers come up here to North Carolina and kind of make a name for themselves. The next thing you know, they get a shot to drive sometimes. So, you know, there's no telling how you can get your shot, but the important thing is you be prepared whenever it does come.
That's some good advice right there. I tell you what, when you guys get the ARCA car, I think you'll all be sponsored by, like, the Comedy Channel or something.
On a serious note, though, he makes a real good point as far as just being conducting yourself in a professional manner. You know, a lot of times you can go to the local tracks, like just for instance, you know, when we go run sprint cars locally or what have you, you'll see pure stocks and mini stocks and things like that. Next thing you know, you look under and it'll be a big ruckus and people are fighting. Don't let yourself get caught up in the nonsense. There's no need to, you know, you didn't come to fight, you come to race.
Right.
Conduct yourself in a proper manner. You don't have to be arrogant, you don't have to be stuck up, you don't have to think you're better than everybody else. But you don't want to get caught up in the nonsense that goes on in some of the things at your local short track, because, like he said, you never know who's watching. You know, granted, it might not be a Nextel Cup owner, but it could be a guy with a sportsman car that's watching, or it could be a guy with a late model and saying,
right,
hey, man,
right,
I was going to let that kid drive my car, but I just watched him, you know, cuss and carry on and roll around in the dirt with this guy. Why am I going to do that now? I'm not going to take the chance of letting him mess up my car.
That's the truth, man. That's so many times.
What a novel idea.
Yeah. I have actually known people that have lost rides, potential rides they were going to get.
That's right.
Because they've done something stupid like that, ripped the fenders off their own car out on the racetrack.
A few of those. You know, and in all honesty, it's not everybody else's fault as far as when they do things like that. As far as myself and David, we had role models that showed us the proper way of conducting yourself at the racetrack. And, you know, for everybody else, I feel sorry because they didn't get to see that and know how it's supposed to work. You know, when they were angry, nobody else seen it. You know, they went in the trailer and invented themselves or whatever, or they just sucked it up and dealt with it on their own. They didn't go down and want to swing on somebody, and they didn't go roll around in the dirt and act a fool. So, you know, it's a shame that everybody else couldn't be privy to what we seen to, you know, when we were growing up.
On the lighter side of someone just starting off in a racing, one word of advice from somebody experienced: when you put your seatbelts in your car, always fix it where you can unlatch it with your right hand. I think a lot of people know Wayne and I used to drive with I had a red silk shirt that I drove, and Wayne had his blue. And so one night over at Sunshine Speedway, I had my seatbelt where I hooked it with my left hand. So when you go in a corner and you turn the wheel to the left, your sleeve gets caught in the buckle and unhooks your seatbelt, and you fall out of the seat. So always fasten your seatbelt so you can fasten it with your right hand.
That's some good advice right there. Well, David, it's been great having you on the show with us. Your family is just fantastic, man. It's just been...
Never enough time.
Never enough time.
He didn't live up to us, did he? I didn't think he did. I think he lacked.
I know I had a tough act to follow, but I appreciate you guys having me on. And I know Sean's disappointed. He's still in the air somewhere. His plane got delayed. I've been sitting out here in the parking lot for the last hour and 15 minutes waiting for him. So he's going to have to buy me dinner when he lands. But I'm very proud of my entire family. You know, my uncles, my Uncle Wayne and my dad. And Wayne Jr. I don't tell those guys that a lot, but my uncle and my dad, kind of paved the way for us, and that they made a name for us long before we ever showed up, it's an honor to whenever you go to a race. There's not a racetrack I've gone to, whether it be California, Vegas, Texas, doesn't matter, that I've gone to that hasn't come up and say, hey, I watched your uncle race a sprint car, I watched your dad race a modified. Who's that racing a Silver Crown car? There's always somebody that has watched them or is currently watching, and everybody's always got a story, and I haven't heard a bad one yet. So a lot can be said when you race as much as those guys have, and you leave a territory that you've been racing and you won a lot of races with, and people hold you in such high respect. I think that says a lot about what they've done. But, regardless of what I do or what I screw up or what Wayne and I, Junior and I can do. My Uncle Wayne and my dad are two of the guys that got the deal rolling, and they screwed us up from birth, isn't that right, Wayne Jr.?
That is correct. It's their fault that we're not doctors and lawyers.
David, real quick, we had Darrell Waltrip on not too long ago, and he compared you to a driver that's a pretty much a legend and a hero down here to Pete Orr. So that's a lot of respect for a race car driver.
Did.
Wow, that's some really high praise there. Pete Orr, what a class act, really. I never really had the opportunity to race with a man, but his reputation certainly preceded him, and he was definitely a guy that got a lot out of what he was driving, and was a gentleman while he did it. So I'm proud of that, really am.
Well, David, there's a whole lot of race fans in Florida that are proud of you, and I'll tell you what, you did something pretty cool, man. You even got me watching Nasty Car on Sunday.
Well, that is big. Hopefully, before long, you guys won't have to just you'll be able to see me running towards the front with a camera's actually showing rather than just watching the ticker run across the top of the screen.
That's right.
Well, thanks a lot, David. Wayne, you got anything in closing?
No, I just want to wish David luck this weekend, buddy.
I appreciate it, Unc. And you need to come on. I mean, I keep trying to get you to come to one of these races. I mean, I can get your credentials and everything. If you can get a kitchen pass, I'd love to have you come sometime.
I'm afraid they'd want to put me in the car if I showed up.
You got a good point.
Real quick, David, I almost forgot. Rick Bristol wanted to thank you for coming out to that charity Truckers 200 last year.
Yeah, actually, it was great to be there. I know they're having another deal this year, and I'm going to try to get schedule worked out. We're going to be there again this year. I'm love to come. It was a great event last year. I know the cold weather kept the crowd away a little bit, but hopefully we'll have a better turnout this year and raise some more money.
Buzzy, Rick said that he'll get you a truck if you want one to race in that.
There you go.
Buzzy, you got anything in closing?
Oh, well, I just want to know, you get racers together like a family like ours, and racers can tell stories all night long. We can be here till 12 o'clock if you want us to stay that long. But we really enjoy coming out, and I hope some of the people that are listening enjoyed some of the stories. And we expect to be invited back again.
Oh, you definitely will. We will have part two.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I'll tell you what, we're going to go to a break here.
Wait, we got Wayne Jr.?
We're not done. So people that are people.
We're going to come back?
We're going to come back in just a minute with Nitro Night with the Hogs.
Oh, okay.
But those people are hanging on there waiting. Those guys, we just want to let them know we're coming to them.
Wayne Jr., you got anything in closing real quick?
I was going to, but the guy's cutting me off.
Oh, we do that all the time. That's our job.
That's our job. No, actually, what I was going to say is, all the people listening to this and things like that, they heard David Ruderman say that, there's some ARCA talk going on, so, we need to hold him to it because, that could advance me. So in any way to get in his wallet, I'm going to be good with.
There you go, brother. All right, guys.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that. I don't know. That dude right there.
It has been our pleasure to have you guys on tonight.
Absolutely.
It's just fantastic. And we will have the Ruderman Family 2 show coming soon.
It's amazing.
Really. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dad. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Jack, take us out to a break.